It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is Time Enough Podcast. Welcome to Time Enough Podcast. It's where we delve into all of the episodes of The Twilight Zone and beyond. As always, it's Matt here. Coming back, it's Mike Richards from Mission Log the Orville. How's it going?
It's going well, Matt. Thanks for having me back. We're really looking forward to digging into season four, which didn't really show up in the syndication packages. So I'm just happy to be here, man. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, it's new for a lot of people because it's an hour. So what can you do? You know, they don't split up that well. It's
like previously on the Twilight Zone,
right? Like today, Death Ship. I mean, that would make a totally bizarre two-parter. Like you don't even quite have a cliffhanger; it'd just be like a weird interlude if you split it.
Yeah, or like the whole season of a series, like you know, other franchises that make a whole season out of one episode.
Right. Oh, yes. So that's a modern problem. I don't think they did that so much back in the day. I guess soap operas always did that a little bit, but.
Oh, yeah. And even things like, what was the vampire, Dark Shadows, and things like that ran for decades.
Right, but that's, you know, low production daily. It's like, here's your lines, one take. It's on TV tomorrow, you know?
And don't worry about it. Nobody's ever going to watch it again.
Well, a lot of those have been lost. I mean, this is movies, but I think it's 50% of all American movies made before 1950 are lost, and something like 80 or 90% made before 1930. They're just like, you know,
oh,
what
that's
we
tragic.
Have very little. Yeah. Film preservation is kind of a big thing in that regard. So in the past, when it was like, here's your bright new version of Vertigo, that was exciting because Vertigo was weirdly a film about to get lost because they just didn't have the proper elements. It was like the rights were up in the air for years. So that was a big film preservation thing in the 80s when they got those kind of like orphaned Hitchcocks and got them back properly, you know, proper prints, all that sort of stuff. Twilight Zone, of course, holds up quite well. You know, I'm watching on Blu-ray. They look great. My dad watches them on streaming. He's like, this is probably better in the Blu-ray. I'm like, I'm not sure, but we were getting annoyed last week.
It's probably better on the Blu-ray. Yeah.
I don't know.
I think it looks good. I watch it on Paramount Plus. You can definitely tell, you know, that a lot of them were probably transferred off of film and the definition is very good.
Yeah. Okay. I've never been a streamer. I just live in Japan. It's, you know, I don't really stream. So it's, get the physical media when it's time and that sort of thing, which I do for the Twilight Zone. But today's Death Ship, I'll do a bit of the trivia on this one. The original air date was September 7th, 1963. Script is by Richard Matheson, based on an earlier story he wrote by the same title. This is the last of five episodes Dodd and Medford directed for The Twilight Zone. He had previously directed Jack Klugman in season one's A Passage for Trumpet. Of course, Jack Klugman is here as Captain Paul Ross. Klugman was a legend of stage and screen, The Odd Couple being his main calling card. He was prolific in The Twilight Zone, and we'll see him come through one more time in season five, Searching for Pip, I believe. Lieutenant Ted Mason was played by Ross Martin. He was Artemis Gordon in the Wild Wild West TV show and also provided Dr. Paul Williams' voice in the OG 1973 C-Lab 2020, though I'm a snarky guy who prefers C-Lab 2021, but whatever.
Do you prefer... what was the... Sequest or Sequest DSV or Sequest 2032?
Roy Scheider, is it? You know, yeah. I've never seen much of that one. I know C-Lab 2021. Do you know that one?
I don't know. But
that was
of those.
The Cartoon Network. Adult Swim just took the footage from the 70s show and added like like meta, you know, dirty humor, that sort of stuff. And it's just every episode ends with like the C-Lab like imploding because they're stupid or something. But I'm a fan of that one. Moving along, Fred Bear was the dopey Lieutenant Mike Carter. He made many of the
So,
60.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. He reminded me of the Yang from Omega Glory.
Yeah.
Freedom? Like he was so dumb. Anyway,
No,
I'm sorry.
I know that's fine. I usually don't put commentary into the trivia, but I'm like, who is this guy? He's the dopey Lieutenant Mike Carter, the Logie Lieutenant Mike Carter. He made many of the 60s and 70s TV guest star rounds, but we will note that he appeared again with Klugman in the Odd Couple TV show, as well as an appearance on Kolchak, The Night Stalker. Can't leave that out when it appears on your screen. The ghostly Ruth Mason was played by Mary Webster. We also saw her way back when in A Passage for Trumpet. Again, I didn't make a note for the other guy who shows up in one of the dream sequences, and the girl had nothing on her, but I did notice the other guy was another something Ross. So it's Klugman is Captain Ross. Mason's played by Ross Martin, and then another guy's name is Ross. I'm like, man, this is a Rossed up episode. So.
It was Ross to the nines, but I couldn't tell if that guy was not, it looked so much like, what was it, Madsen, the other crew member. So it was Carter, Ross, and the third guy. They looked an awful lot alike to
Mason,
me.
Mason, that's it.
Mason. Yeah. And I was like, is that his buddy Mason? 'Cause that looks weird. I don't know.
Sorry, one little more bit here just to keep track of our Forbidden Planet props. The E-89 is the same model flying saucer we saw in that movie. I mean, it's the same model. Sorry, it sounds like I'm calling it like a model of a car, but it is the model from that movie. Okay.
The same exact physical
Now I'm questioning
prop.
myself now, but yes, I believe that's what I'm saying.
But Matt, all rocket designs might be universal, so it might not be the same model. It could just be exactly the same from
Yeah.
even
Do
another
flying
planet.
saucers have rockets though? I think they should use what they used anti-grav, right?
I would think so, but they did, I think on the launch, didn't they show some like flames coming out of the bottom of it? And I was like, that they're not going to get a lot of propulsion unless they get a better nozzle out of
Yeah,
that thing. Because
it's
it was just like a
space
candle
juice.
burning.
It's the future of 1997.
What do they know? Picture of the spaceship E-89 cruising above the 13th planet of Star System 51, the year 1997. In a little while, supposedly, the ship will be landed and specimens taken. Vegetable, mineral, and if any, animal. These will be brought back to overpopulated Earth, where technicians will evaluate them. And if everything is satisfactory, stamp their findings with the word inhabitable and open up yet another planet for colonization. These are the things that are supposed to happen. Picture of the crew of the spaceship E-89. Captain Ross, Lieutenant Mason, Lieutenant Carter. Three men who have just reached a place which is as far from home as they will ever be. Three men who, in a matter of minutes, will be plunged into the darkest nightmare reaches of the Twilight Zone.
So first off, we are to assume that there are many ships going out into space like this looking for inhabitable planets. This is one
Yeah,
of many.
but
I hope
yeah.
it is, because clearly they did not do any psychological screening or proper hiring practices. I mean, you
Or
could do
like
the
any kind of
normal.
like crew coordination training or like command leadership, resource management stuff, or the importance of vulnerability in a leader. Like we could go on and on and on. That like none of that stuff happened.
Which was honestly made it kind of fun to watch, but we've
Yeah.
talked before how we why are they sending two men crew into the into space on the Twilight Zone? Well, now we have three again. We've had three before, but we get three in this one, which is a little more proper. But by the end, I would start writing like this. And okay, this is not a criticizing of the episode. This is me having a fun thought experiment. This episode would work really well if you just put Larry Moe and Curly in there. Just run it as a three star. Oh, guys, we're going back. What are we doing? We're going back, you
What?
know? Where are you, my
It
pussy
was so
boom?
ridiculous. Like we're gonna go, and we're gonna go all the way back to Earth, and you're gonna see. And as soon as they get, I guess, into orbit or broke away, Klugman's like, I'm sorry, Ross is like, we're going back. What?
Yeah, I think that's when I finally was like, this is like that would be Mo. So it makes
Yeah.
sense. I haven't worked out between I guess Larry would be Mason because Larry's slightly smarter than Curly. Is that how
Yeah.
we're supposed to work it
Yeah,
out?
I
So
think Curly is definitely Carter. In
I
fact, I
don't
think
think
they
this,
kind of telegraphed that one.
and I don't think this is the first episode where I've had that thought as well. Like, why don't we just like redo this with the Three
The
Stooges?
what was it, Fred Ward? Was it that one? No, it wasn't Fred Ward, it was way before him. The gold in the desert one, the heist, the bank heist where they go to
The
camp out in
Rip
the
Van
desert for 500
Winkle
years.
thing, yeah.
Yeah, that could have been the Stooges just as
But
well.
no, it is weird watching Klugman in this after seeing him do very humanistic performances, and well, of course, from the TV shows we know him from, and from A Passage for Trumpet, and especially A Game of Pool, where he's obsessed, but
Right.
you know, it's in a pool room, it's a small thing, and he and it's I mean it's kind of fun to see him as like space pilot now. But it's a
It, you know,
weird turn.
it kind of was. I wonder, you know, there was a line very much in the beginning where Madsen was like, I can't talk to him anymore. And the other guy's like, yeah, he's acting funny, right? It's like, yeah, maybe you should look into this a little bit. Maybe this is like a crew dynamic or an interpersonal thing, or just, you know, as a human being, why is your commander and arguably probably somebody even camped up on the spaceship for a while acting weird? Maybe you ought to ask them if everything's okay.
Space madness. Like the Ren and Stimpy thing. That's kind of what I kind of gave it to. But yeah, just IQ test as well. I mean, I guess they've been in space for a while. They're coming from an Earth that they do mention is completely like, you know, not desolate, but environmentally compromised, I guess. There's just
Yeah, I
like
mean,
one line, throw off line to that.
the only one I've got is overpopulated in the prologue, but there was something else in the episode that referenced Earth not being in such good shape.
Yeah, it's like the Space 1999, well, not that, but the in-between season special we did recently, where same thing, there's kind of a toss-off line that way. Wait, a little bit more, please? Is this a
Yeah.
silent running thing? What's going on? So this could be in the silent runnings verse, which would make sense because they didn't like psychologically test that crew either, so
Well,
clearly.
I thought it was funny when they got down to when they got down to the planet, and I swear to God, it looked like Carter opened a window. Maybe it wasn't Carter, maybe it was the other guy, but opened a window, looked out. Maybe there was supposed to be glass there, and maybe it was like really clean space glass. I didn't see any glass. I
Could be
just
one
saw
of
him
those
open the
little
window.
domes you put your face into.
Yeah,
They have one of
sure.
those on the ISS, right? They have like the looks like the Emperor's window or something. You can kind of go in
Yeah.
there and float around. That's where.
Looked outside, poked his head out of the window, and then said, I'm going to check the atmosphere. Like, I think you just did.
Although I would say, still, is it dumb to maybe do it helmet a little bit first? I mean, it doesn't matter here because they can breathe or they're dead, but.
Not even a little bit. And that, you know, and then just, you know, you look at some of these tropes, and like even on the Orville, there was the the episode Shadow Realms, where they all went over to this, you know, kind of like a biological, you know, space vessel thing in season three. Nobody's wearing any environmental suit or anything like that. So,
And then they start
but it
touching
did.
things.
And then they start touching things and blowing on them and getting spored. But then I also saw that maybe the conversation with Commander Ross before he got his captain seat was, yeah, you're not anybody's first choice, but we've got 300 new ships we need commanders for. So it's your turn.
Yeah, I'm guessing maybe this is like the worst of the bunch or something, because
It
it's
could
like.
be, and they also weren't particularly surprised to see another ship out there.
Yeah, because it could be just, well, they I'm thinking of something else, aren't I? Okay. Yeah, they could just be going out by rabbits, you know, like bouncing into each other. I don't know if that happened in the Age of Exploration where tall ships would randomly run into another one. They'd run onto a wreck though, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I bet they would. Because the
So
wreck ain't going anywhere.
I'm willing to go that
Unless just
there
floating
could
around.
be a crash there. Now it does sound like I'm somewhat poopy on this episode, which I did enjoy watching. I think it's fascinating as a 1963 slice of trying to get into more modern sci-fi. This is like very much like between old school sci-fi and starting to think a little more about, I guess, you know, Trek era sci-fi, which
Yeah.
means Trek has done episodes kind of like this, which are better. The one that really occurred to me was a Times Squared, where of course Captain Picard has to get out of the weird loop, or you won't have the next episode. But in that case, he's kind of by himself, which is also cool. Well, he's with literally by himself because there's the other version of him, but that's driving him mad. Like Ross is kind of going, well, the whole crew's going mad, but that's kind of refined that concept, I think. And I will go out and just say, I think that is a better episode than this one, but it is interesting to, well, I guess my tripometer will be a little bit higher. So, as a
Yeah,
view.
it's no, it was a good episode. I mean, it really was. It packed a lot into it. I'm still gonna have some fun and, rip on it a little bit just because it's, what I like to do. But it's a fun, it, I mean, it was a good episode. I think it did tell a great story. And I agree with you that it was sort of somewhere between what every old school, old sci-fi was like, which was there would have been a monster somewhere, right? Or there would have been, an alien somewhere, where this one, it was just sort of like they were wrestling with their own existence or, maybe lack thereof.
So in the end, I guess I was starting to buy, probably because I've seen so much Trek, I was starting to buy into his telepathic alien ideas, but I guess it is more just supernatural limbo that they're bouncing around in.
Yeah, so I think that there was I went down that too, the theory of the supernatural, not supernatural, but mind controlling aliens, and immediately thought of the Talosians and their ability to make people think or see
And that's a year after this, so it didn't seem
whatever
like
they
too
want.
far a call.
But and then I look at I looked at Twilight, the Twilight Zone. I think just previously to this, because I was a little bit behind the rewatch for these, so I was up to oh gosh, I forget the name of the episode, but the one with Carol Burnett, the It's a Wonderful Life episode.
Cavender is coming.
Yes, that's it. And I watched it and I was like, okay, so there are angels in the Twilight Zone universe. There are, so theoretically there's religion and afterlife and Christianity, because they're symbols of that. So and then I saw this and I was like, okay, so is this an in between kind of thing, like a purgatory sort of thing, or is this just it? Because it sounded like at the end, like these three are going to be kind of cruising around on this death ship forever. Like the crew of the Mary Celeste was just in limbo more or less forever. What do you
I
think?
guess
Hinting
that I
at.
guess that's what makes it supernatural, because even if they went back, even if they saw the ship again, then there's the disconnect where it kind of like resets, right? Where everyone is acting like a crew again, and I guess they're going to fall apart pretty shortly, but that's the moment where I'm like, okay, it has to be a supernatural thing. It can't be the alien thing. Up to that point, I would say, and as a modern viewer, of course, I'm like, oh yeah, it's telepathic aliens, but it's 1963. Again, it's the year before Trek even does its pilot, and there's still the supernatural element, which I guess someone, into the Twilight Zone 1963 might be disappointed if it wasn't a bit supernatural. That's kind of what they're here for.
I would think so.
But then, yeah, just science fiction has changed a lot, because I guess one of the things the Twilight Zone does is kind of start to, by getting Richard Matheson on here in great part, and Charles Beaumont is taking, because in the 50s, like, no, if you want smart science fiction, you need to read books. Like, early science fiction conventions were very gatekeeping, like, no, none of the movie crap, it's the or TV, it's all the books. We get together, we talk about the books. And this is one of the first places where I think science fiction was kind of like being, well, let's see if we can film like something a little bit more like the books.
Yeah, and it's I looked it up because I mean I recognized right away as I was watching the credits, I was like, oh, okay, another Richard Matheson episode. 16 episodes, I think. Does that sound right, of the
That
Twilight Zone?
sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah. And many of them were, I think, previous work. This was written about 10 years before that as a short story, novella, something along those lines, and got repurposed for this episode. But yeah, it's definitely, like, I think you're exactly right. Bringing that level of, the most sophisticated stories science fiction had to offer, up to this point was, like you said, written. written in books and short stories and anthology series and things like that. So it's yeah, it's great that those folks were brought on board to level up.
Yeah, for sure. But and then Serling, of course, is coming from the background of having written TV dramas and being considered the best at that. So when he started Twilight Zone, people are like, "What are you doing science fiction for? That's like dumpster diving." And you've got a career like on the rise. So, of course,
Yeah,
he's
and I
done.
even saw an interview with him where he was essentially being asked, is this going to be a medium for you to use as a pulpit to comment, to make comment social commentary? And he was like, I'm just doing science fiction. That's it.
Well, he was
So,
kind of lying about that, I guess, but whatever.
yeah,
You
and there's
don't say it directly.
no, you don't. And I don't, I mean, I honestly, I don't see how you can do anything, tell any meaningful story without there being some, application to real people living in the real world that they can learn from. I mean, there's always, if it's a good story, it's going to have that connection to it that you can make.
Yeah, and something I've actually been considering on this podcast, and listeners, if you'd like to respond, I think you can find at least film versions of some of his 50s Playhouse things, like that maybe some of the original broadcasts are lost, but some of them were later turned into movies. So I was thinking about having a look at a couple of those. I thought about during the strike, but I was like, it still might be like in the purview of, CBS or something, so I'll wait a bit. But because I haven't seen Patterns, I haven't seen Requiem for a Heavyweight. I don't think people watch those a lot because they just go straight to the Twilight Zone, So, but and I who knows, maybe I'll feel a slight bit of disappointment that it's not trippy and weird, but
But yeah, but I think it'd still be interesting to see like what it came from.
yeah, and just to see the writing, how the writing style works in like a slightly different context. Is it better there? Is it worse there? Does it not matter? Is it be interesting to check? I have a couple more dumb observations I'll get into, which is for the first 5 minutes, I thought we had Russell Johnson in this episode again. So, but what's the actor's name?
he would have been better than any of those three, I think. Well,
Fred Beer, yeah.
and yeah, definitely better than Madsen or Carter, I think. I would have definitely taken Russell Johnson.
I was a little disappointed because I was like, well, no, even if he played exactly the same, it'd just be fun to see like the professor being really dumb now. And he's been the zone twice, so it wasn't like unreasonable to expect him in this. A couple more things about the ship. Those are some of the weirdest launch chairs, cradles, whatever you call those things I've seen.
I was surprised they had to put seatbelts on because I just thought that molded body butt pad thing would hold him like right in place. And Carter, if you notice, Carter didn't know how to work a damn seatbelt. He was just like clicking away at this thing, trying to get it to work. And I'm like, dude, you're not even gonna need it, man. You're gonna get pushed straight down into your butt mold. You're not gonna need that
Maybe he was trying to play him as dumb as possible, because that's a choice.
seatbelt.
That's an actor detail, I think, unless the actor
Maybe, unless you just
couldn't
never worked a
function a
seatbelt before.
seatbelt either. Yeah, but I actually didn't notice that. But that's great. I love that idea. This astronaut is so dumb he can't fall. He can't run a seatbelt.
And I love the way Madsen like didn't believe that was himself until he pulled out the ID card and checked it.
Well, okay, yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm trying to make an excuse for him, but I guess you can't, so I won't.
And I think he was already pretty well convinced that that was himself. But then you think, well, if it's really me, we'd have my stuff on, on them, on him.
Hey, this is a different ID card, but yeah.
Bob Ross.
Why Bob Ross?
Oh,
Okay, sorry.
that was a Ted, another Ross, which fits in first, but that was a Ted reference.
Okay, that's cool, because Bob Ross just came up in the car yesterday, so I was like, that's weird coincidence. Again, where my wife just goes, Bob Ross. I'm like, what? Because she was like texting her friend in America, and for some reason that came up.
Yeah, no, Ted got a fake ID, and the guy gave him Ted Ross, and he was like, what'd you make me Ted Ross for? And he goes, you're kind of a corner case, man. It was either that or a pair of Uggs.
I mean, you can't tell. Hey, you know what a bear's ID is? Claws. I guess a teddy bear didn't have claws, though. So. Give a bear anything at once if it's a proper bear, yeah.
That's it.
Do you think
I
this
liked
episode?
the
Oh, go ahead.
oh, I was gonna say I liked the line where Jack Klugman kept telling Madsen, as I guess the radio operator, like what to do. And at one point he was like, try auxiliary. Did you try auxiliary? And it just reminded me of Star Trek II, where Kirk was yelling down to engineering to tell Scotty to try auxiliary, and he's like, I don't you think I would have tried that?
Oh yeah, I wrote in my notes just I like things better before the auxiliary light system. It didn't really help, or he screwed it up because these guys seem to be inept. Again,
Yeah.
this a great another great episode for the Three Stooges to be in. Would this up? Would you like this episode better or worse if they were like intelligent, thoughtful astronauts?
The interesting part was that I really felt like if I could vibe with any of them, it would have been Jack Klugman, because he kept saying there's got to be a logical explanation. There has to be. So I didn't realize that that was the way he did, the way he was manifesting denial was by saying there's got to be a logical explanation. But I do think if there was a little bit more, good communication between the two, maybe a little bit more, humility and approachability that the captain had between him and the other two crew members, I think that would have gone a long way.
He's
I
got to
think
pull
I
up his
would have
dizzle.
yeah, I think I would have liked it better if it was a kind of a well-oiled crew that had been working together for a while, and weren't just so kind of snippy and short with each other. But then again, I've never been in a flying saucer, aka rocket ship, as they like to call it, looking for other planets, because I know my home planet's a mess. And one of them lost their wife and kid, and another one's just, I don't know, just weird. And then the other one's like got some kind of like superior slash inferiority complex. The crew
Again,
dynamic
psychological
wasn't,
screening could have helped,
yeah.
but there could be so many of these out there, and Earth is so desperate that these guys end up
Yeah.
on a saucer. So there is
Yeah.
kind of an explanation, I guess. But and then yeah, like you said, well, like I was thinking, they're on the saucer, and it's a tiny saucer. It's that one control room, the Kahn, and then there's like what two little compartments off of that.
They did, yeah. They showed the room with the bunk, and I think I saw two beds in there. So I don't know, maybe the captain gets his own, maybe he gets his own little room. I don't know.
Have you
But
seen the
yeah,
movie
not.
Dark Star?
No.
That's John Carpenter's first movie, extremely low budget,
Okay.
but worth watching actually once he's doing the music, so it's got John Carpenter's soundtrack, which is always good. But the point of the movie, it's this crew that's set out to like blow up suns or something, and they're basically completely forgotten about, and they've all gone nuts. There's one guy, which I guess is me at my job now, because I'm always at the satellite school and no one sees me. But one guy just he just sits up in the dome all the time, just staring at the stars. Maybe he's looking for space trash or something. That could actually be his job, but he doesn't even like interact with the rest of the crew, and they've all just grown beards, and their where they live has turned into like a trashy dorm room, basically. And oh, the actual rooms had some problems, so now they just live in a cargo bay, and it's like a trashy dorm area. But
That sounds amazing. Yeah, I'm kind of look kind of sorry about
and
that.
it's
I'm kind of
written
looking at
by Dan O'Bannon, who wrote Alien, and includes a 10-minute sequence, which is like a really dumb proto version of Alien, where the alien is now basically a beach ball with feet.
Oh my God, where can I stream this thing?
It's, I think, YouTube, to be honest, but it's
Okay,
worth a
yeah.
view. Yeah.
Good deal. Yeah, I got it saved in my browser.
Because that takes Death Ship even farther in the other direction, where she's like, let's just make them a bunch of complete morons that are tired of each other and have complete and utter space madness.
And I kind of wonder what happened, because who did Ross punch? Who did Klugman punch? Was it Madsen after his fantasy? I think it.
I think it was is it Mads or Mace? I don't know. It didn't matter. But I
Oh,
think it
sorry,
was him
Mason.
because it's like punching down if you punch Carter. I feel like, you know,
Yeah. So he punched
you
him in the
can't.
gut, and like that had the desired effect. Like the guy stopped like panicking. Like, you know, he punched him in the gut. He got him to like stop what he was doing, and then went on and punched him in the face anyway.
It's
I was
almost
like,
like I'm starting to like this better just talking about how dumb they are. It's like, no, it's like
yeah.
I want to watch it and see how dumb they are now. Hey, that works. So if I'm doing the podcast, like, I want to watch it again, you know?
Yeah, I hope I'm not, you know, offending your audience. That is, you know, if they're like, because this is going to be somebody's favorite episode, and it was a good episode. I mean, don't get me wrong,
No, that's
but I
the
mean.
weird thing about it. It's what is the sauce on this episode? Like, it was absolutely fun to watch, but mostly we're just like, you know, ripping it apart because it's fun too.
So, you know, like I'm so conditioned, I think, you know, because my entry into, you know, television science fiction was Star Trek, the original series. And yeah, you know, at the end of the day, you get a Kirk speech and, you know, it puts everything in perspective. But, you know, the 50 minutes before that is just a rip roaring good time where you can, it's a free for all where you can have fun with all kinds of things, you know, whether it be the Reds, the feeders of Vol or whoever you want. It just, that's all fair game, I think. But then at the end of the day, just like this, at the end of the day, there's, I think, a couple of really important points that, you know, come across the table at the end of this episode. And I don't think any of the, you know, what are we at, 60 plus years, 61 years since this aired, you know, takes away from that.
Yeah, I think the general concept is kind of smart. So maybe that thread holds. I didn't read the original short story. I would just, I mean, maybe they're contentious and horrible in the short story, and it would maybe play better in written word than it does on screen if for punch, you know, gut punches and stuff like that. So it might just be weird when you have to do it in a even. So maybe the question that keeps coming up is, did this need to be 50 minutes, or would 25 have been better?
Oh, I think I was kind of wondering that when I was watching those, you know, fantasy scenes of,
That's kind of in the back of our minds for like all of these season four episodes, you
of
know?
Mason with, you know, his, you know, really extended, you know, touchy scene with, you know, a girl actor who's, I'm sure, not his real life daughter. And I'm like, whoa, buddy, getting a little handsy there, man.
And then yeah, of course that's why, you know, Ruth Mason's on screen, or Mary Webster is the actor, but she's on screen so much. I was like, well, I guess I am gonna put her in trivia because we spend like a good 5 minutes with her, you know, which definitely would not have been the case in a 25-minute Twilight Zone episode. In general, though,
No.
I think this one felt like it had enough meat to like it had like a Star Trek TOS episode 50 minutes of meat, you know, I think.
Well, yeah, and I think what was really important, you know, about those fantasy scenes, you know, put into perspective, it was like, you know, Mason and Carter were both like, let us go, please let us go. Like they were getting glimpses of what the afterlife would be like, you know, where Carter got to go home and where, you know, Mason got to be with his wife and daughter who tragically died. You know, so that like those scenes, you know, I think were important, you know, and you could see why at the end, you know, they were desperately asking, you know, Captain Ross to please let us go. Like, man, it's over. We know what this is.
I guess why is it dependent on Ross needing to let them go anyway? I mean, I guess they can't overpower him because he's too good a puncher, but if it's not aliens and now it is actually the great beyond, it seems like they might have their own agency a little bit more. I don't know.
I
do you have to
guess,
wait for
yeah.
everyone to anonymously and wait for everybody to vote yes on going to the afterlife?
Well, you
Maybe
see,
bring your
Matt,
dog.
as the captain of a ship, everybody on board has to listen to you at
Even
least
if you're
once
dead ghosts on a death ship. What
on a death ship. Exactly right. I love this though. I love this.
this? Are
I'm
you guys on
talking
some
about
kind of a
us.
death ship?
I'm talking about us going up all the way back to Earth.
Yep. And then
Nope.
instantly changing his mind for no
Yeah.
particular
And he was like,
reason.
and didn't he said we're under orders to collect samples, right?
I think when
But
you have extenuating circumstances, like at that point, thinking that there are telepathic aliens, it might be worth, putting the cones around the planet as they do in many Star Treks. Put the cones around the planet. This one's, let's just call it uninhabitable because it's too weird. Why not? You don't want to live
it's just
there.
too weird. In fact, even there would have been, I was making an argument for when Ross was like, ah, door's jammed. Let's get out of here.
Yeah, sure.
Good deal, man. And somebody asked, did you not even look inside? Maybe people were hurt. Maybe people were wounded. Maybe they could have used your help. Nope. Too weird.
Well, I think wearing helmets would have been smart, but otherwise, yes, explore the ship. That makes sense. That seems like something you'd do under orders. But by minute 40 of this episode, and they're taking off. Yeah, it's probably you want to stay off of that planet, or at
Did you
least
notice?
send a more skilled team at that point.
Yeah. And did you notice what Ross called for both times that they were getting ready to land?
Was that?
He called for air springs both times that they were getting ready to land.
Huh.
Yeah. I want air springs.
Yeah, I'm not sure what an air spring is. I was thinking like mattress coils for some reason, but they're made out of air, but that doesn't make sense.
I don't know. Air brakes. Air springs.
Yeah,
I don't know. But yeah, it was, I think it was I do think it was worthy of, the hour long time slot.
I guess this is the biggest backhanded compliment episode of the Twilight Zone we've come across. It's just, yeah, it's like, yeah, it should be 50 minutes. Well, yeah, it's a good watch. These guys are schmucks. So.
And I wonder what that added to this episode, because if this was like if this was an episode of Mission Log of the Orville, I'd probably watch it 4 or 5 times, and at some point, and sometimes it's not until like the fifth viewing that something clicks. Now, that's not really fair because most people just watch a show once, and that's the impression they're going to get, and that's what they're going to be left with. So, but if I'm wondering if I watch this 3 more times, because I did watch it twice. If it would make sense why the crew was as dysfunctional as it was, is it because this has already happened to them 500,000 times, kind of like in cause and effect, and their patience and their ability to do cool
Logically think.
astronaut stuff, logically think, has withered over that time. I don't know, but I think it was a conscious decision to make this crew a little bit less than ideal. And like I said, maybe it's just because, hey, at this point, 1997, we got a lot of ships to fill.
It's like a, it's like just you got to send garbage trucks around the city, and if you can get people that are willing to work on them, then you hire them. I don't know, because I couldn't get past the garbage smell. I that's an unenviable thing. I would hate to spend all day having to deal with that.
Right.
Not say, but I'm trying to look for clues here in the prologue or the. I'm going to look at the epilogue on Death Ship and see if that gives us any additional clues from Rod Serling's narration, even though he clearly was not on set here. 2 minutes, not blah, blah, blah. Okay, here we go. I'll go ahead and read the closing narration. I'll do my own reading. I think this maybe helps a little bit. Picture of a man who will not see anything he does not choose to see, including his own death. A man of such indomitable will that even the two men beneath his command are not allowed to see truth, which truth is that they are no longer among the living, that the movements they make and the words they speak have all been made and spoken countless times before, and will be made and spoken countless times again, perhaps even unto eternity. Picture of a latter-day Flying Dutchman sailing into the Twilight Zone. So he's saying that this is like, the metric average of infinity, I guess, of them doing this. It's a subtle suggestion,
Metric
but
average. Yeah.
that's that statement The movements they make and the words they speak have all been made and spoken countless times before and been made and spoken
Right.
countless times again. That kind of suggests that maybe their mental state is. It would have been nice for them to maybe take 1 minute from the fantasy sequence and like spell it out in their 50 minutes, I guess. I could have
Yeah.
used that spelled out a little bit better. And that would, I think, have made us less flippant about this crew if we could properly attach that. But it looks like it is baked into the story, and maybe that just
Yeah.
wasn't highlighted enough.
And if you think that their behavior is going to change as they go through the scenario over and over and over again, which they obviously were finna do right there at the end when, old boy's like, yeah, I see some blinky lights down there. The other guy's like, oh, maybe we should investigate them.
I mean, it's like,
And then
would you be willing to go re-experience part of your life? You go back and live it all again, but you can make no changes whatsoever. Like just, I get, you have to do all the same things. Like it's
man,
not like
I'd be afraid
you
if,
have no choice to even do anything different.
yeah, that'd be tough. But I'd also be afraid to go back and start changing stuff because that could lead to a reality where I'm not sitting here enjoying a nice bottle of Ice Mountain spring water
All
and
right.
chatting with you about the Twilight Zone.
Right. My suggestion is suggesting that you would be 100% unable to change anything. But I'm thinking, even if it's a nice day, even if it's that trip to Disneyland, you'll be reliving, like, oh, I want to go over there, but I can't. And I like,
Right.
you're just a passenger in your body for the
Yeah.
day, is what I'm kind of saying.
So yeah, that was kind of my point that I guess I didn't make, was that if I was gonna go back in time and experience a day again, I think I'd be more comfortable not being able to change it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm giving at. But these guys might be in that situation, and that's where they're getting frustrated and mentally worn
Yeah.
down at the point we're seeing them. See, I'm trying to make an
Yeah.
excuse for this episode because I do like it, so
It's good.
I
It,
want to make
it
this
makes
work,
sense because it was obviously a choice for them to, and that's one of those, layers of the onion that you peel back and then you realize, these guys probably are exhausted, that at some level, they've been doing this over and over and over again. And maybe if it's not fully, it certainly does not seem like they're fully conscious of it. But they are on some physiological level or emotional or mental level, metaphysical level, it's taken its toll on them. I do think that was, I will give them the benefit of the doubt and
Because
say that
when we see the
that's what's happening.
reset, we get the end of the episode, we do get the 10 seconds of them acting like a proper crew, knowing it's all going to unravel and,
Yeah.
again. So.
So how you mentioned, Times Squared. I wanted to mention Lost, which spoilers for, Lost. If you haven't listened to Lost, if you haven't watched it, should they pause this recording now? Pause the podcast now. Go watch 7 seasons of Lost and then come back.
Oh, it's only
Or is it?
six.
Or is that? Oh, it's only six. Okay, good. But that was sort of the gist in Lost as well, right? It was, airplane instead of rocket ship. Or flying saucer.
It's kind of like I think that was the original concept, and the internet like called it out too early. So they spent three
Right.
seasons just trying to do red herrings before. I think the sixth season, you start seeing these weird like flashbacks that don't make any sense. So it seems they all died whenever they did. It could have been 50 years after the show, and all went into the same purgatory.
Right.
Time not mattering in that case. And that's
Yeah, there
what you're
really
seeing in the
is
last season.
no now here. I
Yeah.
remember
Right. So
what Matthew Fox's dad saying.
it's kind of a yeah, it's I'm gonna say it's somewhat unsatisfying, having 15 years in hindsight, or 14 years or whatever. No, I remember at the time, because Battlestar ended, Lost ended like within weeks of each other. And I thought at the time, oh, Lost will be the classic. And now I'm like, oh, Battlestar is the one that kind of seems
Yeah.
to be kicking it still. I mean, there's a few duffer episodes you can watch, and real time, some of it, all the final Cylon stuff got a little goofy, but when you rewatch it, you can kind of forgive that because you know where it's going. Same thing with Death
Yeah.
Ship. When you know where it's going, you can kind of forgive it as we are forgiving their weird behaviors. Because it makes the
Absolutely.
weird behaviors more interesting. That's the point of podcasting a Twilight Zone thing, is to, working that stuff out, right?
Yeah. No, I think definitely a worthwhile conversation about that, whether or not we were just, because like I said, I mean, 1963 sci-fi, like anything before that, it was like these competent, you know, academy trained, pseudo military, folks that, you know, like work together, in the same manner that, you know, a bridge crew would work on a well-trained, well-vetted Navy vessel. And now, like you said, we're just going to put some guys out there because we need the coverage.
But hey, maybe they were the best of the best, you know, before this all started. I can't.
And they're just worn down, man. They're just worn down.
I don't think they were ever the best of the best, but they might have been more competent.
But they were okay. They were the okayest of the. They were okay.
The best of the best would have escaped the situation and had their own TV show. Yeah, they would
have thrown a time crystal at the old ship and blasted out of there at the last possible second. That's what I would have done.
Let me throw my questions proper on this. Who in this episode, if any, went into the Twilight Zone?
Ruth.
Okay,
no, I'm just
sure.
kidding.
Yeah.
I would say the most of the three, definitely the three crew members.
Yeah.
So I'll say that. Now, did any of them have an edge?
I think maybe Ross is a little deeper just because he's keeping them there. The other guys at least worked it out.
And his powerful will, his will of just power is, you know, makes it unable for the other two to escape. At least they had the benefit of, you know, getting, you know, a little peek at, you know, what the afterlife, I guess, might look like. Whereas Jack the captain was just sort of in denial.
I mean, they probably get a peek in every iteration, don't they?
I would think so.
So they're actually spending 20% of their time in the afterlife. Ross is spending 0% of his time in the afterlife, if we're going by that.
Yeah. Occasion. But he's spending more time like in this weird like denial, like convincing himself it's telepathic aliens place. So I think even though they go to different places in the Twilight Zone, all three of them got to go there and experience about the same level of Twilight Zone-ness.
So how much do they deserve it or not deserve this strange fate?
I don't think they deserve it at all.
Yeah, I was sitting here thinking like the two dopey guys. And I guess Mason's not quite as dopey, Madsen, whichever it is. But Ross kind of does. That's one of the things where I was tying it the most with Times Squared, because that's what Captain Picard has to do, basically get over himself, get over his hubris, get over the fact that he knows he's right. And Ross seems unable to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, he kind of deserves it, which makes the other two guys deserve it less, even if they are goofy.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. You know, his level of, wow. See, this is why you're so much better at this than I am. So his level of hubris, his lack of vulnerability, his lack of being agile in his way of thinking or his inability to listen to other people, kind of put him and then by extension them into this, you know, endless loop. Because
you could like Dante Purgatorio it, where that's the thing he has to get over, even if it takes 1,000 years, you know?
Yeah.
Pay your penance. I don't know. I guess that's paying penance because of sins you committed, which is different than getting over your own hubris. So maybe it's more of an Eastern thing. He's, instead of reincarnating his whole life, he just has to do this one day over and over till he gets it right. Which again happens in Star Trek, but they tend to get over it, you know, sooner than later, where these guys
they
it's
do
gonna be later.
Yeah, but I do think that Captain Ross is deserving of something just based on their level of hubris.
Yeah, he's trying to be professional. He's trying to be logical. And unfortunately, he's in the great beyond where that no longer helps so much.
Yeah, you know, but one of the things about like being, you know, what's really ironic about leading an organization is that you're in command of people that all know more about their specialty than you do. or they should, you know. So you've got to be able to listen to those folks
Would you
and
listen to
not
those
pretend
guys?
like
You want to
you
listen
know.
to Carter?
The one thing, like with Mason, when he was like, you know, this thing sends like the signal automatically anyway, right? And he's just like, do it again, again, again. You know, it's like, oh, it does it automatically? Oh, I didn't know that. I'm really sorry.
But yeah, I don't know if he trusted Screw that much. Well, he doesn't, does he?
Doesn't seem like it.
Let's put this on the tripometer. Zero not trippy, five extremely trippy.
I think this was a fairly high trippy meter just because there was so many kind of unknowns, right? Could be a time loop, right? Could be mind controlling aliens. As it turns out, what the answer I think we were given, so I've got to take it, at face value that that's the answer, was that they were all dead.
A wizard did it.
So I'm sorry.
A wizard did
Yeah. So
it.
I think I might, in my experience, give this, I think I'm going to get into the fours on the trippy meter at this point. Call it nice
I was thinking
4.0.
of four. Yeah, I was thinking
Yeah.
four. Not higher because I think to get higher, it would need to settle on one of the concepts and like kind of knock it out of the park.
Right.
But by putting them all on the table and letting you consider them, here's several trippy ideas you can consider. So
Yeah.
that's worthy of a four. And it's in space. It's got, weird synthesizer noises. So
It does. Had really cool custom astronaut seats.
yeah. So that's enough for me to give it a four for sure. Do you have any final thoughts on this episode?
Just always be cognizant of the fact that, you might be wrong and you ought to listen to some other people that are, in the thick of things with you, just if nothing else, to get their perspective. And it doesn't mean you have to listen to them. It doesn't necessarily mean they're right. Just be willing to have the conversation and always sort of challenge your perceptions and your position, because somebody else may have a nugget of information that could change everything.
Here, I just found the perfect context for this. This is the educational film they show at Starfleet Academy. So then when it's over, the lights come up and the teacher's like, "So what did Ross do wrong?"
Yes, that would be a
Gotcha.
great one. Maybe we can use this one in our training next year for our flight crews.
Now, Ross did not listen to his crew when they had important, and they told him his technical fallacy, which he tried to just brush under a rug and tell him to keep doing it anyway.
Again, we're gonna do it again, and we're gonna do it again, and we're gonna do it again. That was actually, wow. Now that I think about that line, it's like, yeah, he was right. They're gonna do it again and again and again.
So okay, educational film. I should have done this for my old podcast where I looked at educational films. Since you were the guy for this episode too, how do you feel about this one compared with the Odyssey of Flight 33, which had a functioning crew, but kind of the same outcome?
Yeah, I'm gonna lean towards the Odyssey of Flight 33. I think that was among the best episodes of television I remember. I mean, it's the first time I saw that just stuck with me, and it was so even with sort of the did we see dinosaurs at some point in that episode? I
There's
think
one
we
shot.
did.
I believe there's one shot of dinosaurs, yeah.
Yeah. So like even with that, there was just something about that episode that was just so I want to use the word believable. I'm trying to find a different word, but I just keep coming back to that. That episode was just like I could picture that crew in that situation hashing it out and having those same discussions in that same way. Like that was a very, to me, in a weird way, a very weird way, once I suspend my disbelief appropriately, like that was a very believable, a relatable episode. This one I think is a very good episode, but just sort of the weirdnesses of the crew that I think we have a good, in universe explanation for now. But I'm still gonna lean towards The Odyssey as being just a little bit more of a, I don't know, maybe believable scenario.
And the just land at the 39 World's Fair, close enough, and it'll be cool. You can ride
That's it, man.
the
Yeah. I mean,
Futurama.
you'd have a blast. You'd be, just invest in, I don't know, Coca-Cola or something, whatever was taken off back then, 1939, or war bonds. That'd be a good
Yeah.
one.
Yeah. The Death Crew guys, they got nothing. Yeah.
Nothing.
I guess we'll wind this one down today. If you'd like to. What I believe you're up to some Orville stuff, even though we're gonna have to hold our breath for more of the show, but
Yeah, so we were chatting with some of the creatives at the Orville about doing a TED. We're calling it a Shore Leave series. So we're going to cover eight or nine. TED, the series, has seven episodes. So we're going to chat about each one of those while we sip on a little bit of Bear Fight Whiskey, who is sponsoring this endeavor. And chat about Ted with people from the show. So the goal is to get everybody who is on the Orville that is also on Ted to join us and chat about one of the episodes. We've already got several episodes in the can with Georgia Wiggum and Alana Ubach. Alana plays Susan Bennett. Ted and Johnny's, I'll say, well, Johnny's mom. And then Georgia plays their cousin, Blair Bennett. And we've had them on the show to chat about it. We got a few more guests lined up, and then we'll push the episodes in a Shore Leave series coming up. And you can check that out on the Roddenberry Podcast Network. And we've also been told that there will be a season four. And, it really would be, helpful if we leaked that. So we did, but we can't tell you who told us that, unfortunately.
All right. As for this, it's Time Enough Podcast. You can support this at Patreon at Podcastio Podcastius. Mike, you join us for some films and filth over there, talking about the top 100 and bottom 100 movies on IMDb. Podcast 1999 talks about Space 1999. You've been there a bit too. And we got some video game stuff with Luke Loves Pokemon, Hyrule Field Report, just wrapping up Tears of the Kingdom, Legend of Zelda game, and the game show where gamers game each other. Okay, I guess we're just gonna have to start this podcast again. Go back to the beginning. Back to the beginning. We're
We'll start it again, just with slightly less patience
Yeah.
and just a little bit more
No,
annoyed with each other.
not slightly less patience. What are you talking about?
Would you just listen to me once? Just listen to me once, just one time.
My little Sahara, laments of smooth winds that blow. At last, at the end of the line, I only recall the judge shouting, "Hey, this ain't no vaudeville show. You don't need to search for me, as I know from who and where I come. Those perceptions now soar as a falcon, divining what before was vanity. The heat haze will shimmer over the diary I write in, strangely sated in this land of thirst. But my word, how long 8 days actually is. So let those thoughts roam, Bedouin. I went and took my chances over the Atlas range at dark. Thank you. life subsides to be do or die. But the vultures wheel overhead. So in your life's trials, show that spark. No need to look for me where the heat cracks, as I know where and who I am. With adventure as your compass, you're ultimately off a far-off track.